Gresham for Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network. We're into hour two, coast to coast, border to border in America's hat, known as Canada. You can also get us around the world. You can get an internet connection on the Odyssey app, or you can watch me on the YouTube. That's right. Right into my castle and lair, watching me do this show on the Infinity Sports Network. 888-710-4ISN. And boy, what a night it was last night in the NBA. When Nikola Jokic does big things, people start to take notice. And I'll tell you, with what the Denver Nuggets are starting to do in the Western Conference, I am absolutely starting to think that, oh boy, here come the Nuggets, because they are rounding into shape with an unbelievable player in Nikola Jokic. Now, last night, I'm sure a lot of you may not have stayed up to see the game that went into double overtime, where the Timberwolves beat the Nuggets 140 to 139. And I give the Timberwolves a ton of credit. You know, they were kind of sputtering a little bit, and now we've started to see them surge somewhat here after this trade deadline. And, you know, Anthony Edwards is dialing it in. He had 34 points and 10 rebounds and 8 assists last night. And he should have been probably a bigger part of the story, because what the guy did was, you know, drag his team back from, you know, a game that was nip and tuck in the fourth quarter. But Nikola Jokic last night, ladies and gentlemen, he had 10 assists. He had 10 rebounds. You know, he had double digits in points, so you know that it was a triple-double. But Jokic scored 61 of his team's 139 points. 61, 10, and 10. I was looking at some numbers today because I was doing some work on the team that I follow, the Celtics, and I looked at Jason Tatum's year. And Tatum is averaging a tick over 27 points a game. He's fifth in the league in scoring. And he's at, I think it's 8.8 rebounds a game. And I think it's just under six assists, or just over six assists a game, something like that. And then I look at Jokic, and he's averaging a triple-double. Because there's always the talk of who is going to be the MVP. And unfortunately, as a guy who likes the Celtics, for my man Jason Tatum, he's going to put up big numbers every year, and I don't think he'll ever really be an MVP candidate unless he goes above and beyond what the guy normally does, and he's already an all-league player. Meaning, he's not just an all-league player, he's a first-team all-NBA player. He's not just some guy who maybe makes it once in a while. He's a dude whose hand is stamped. And you look at the numbers that Jokic is putting up, and it's just amazing. So the Nuggets did lose that game last night. They're 47-29. They're the number three seed in the West, and why that might work out for them. But the Warriors are winners last night. So Jokic goes for 61. Steph Curry, 52. Along with 10 rebounds and 8 assists. And after the game, Curry said he has a lot of gas left. He's like, we're fueled up and ready to go. So we know that the Warriors are getting themselves ready to kind of kick into that next level when it comes to the postseason. Now, I know I kind of blew by Anthony Edwards in the game that he had last night. Just because he didn't get a triple-double doesn't mean the guy didn't play his tail off. I can't wait for mature Anthony Edwards. I really can't, because if this guy is this good right now at almost 24 years old, what are we going to get out of this guy when he does settle down a little bit, when he sees the rest of the – when he starts to become a little more worldly, I guess, is the way that I should say it when it comes to Ant-Man. Because there are certain things that I think matter to him now that won't when he gets a little bit older, with a little more life experience and with a little more NBA experience. But you look tonight in the NBA, and you really got something you got something to watch in the 7 to 10 window, where tonight the Knicks will take on the Cavs in Cleveland. Now, Cleveland finds themselves at 60-15. And at one point, I do believe, at one point this year, Cleveland had near or close to a double-digit lead in the standings when it came to the Boston Celtics. Well, now the Celtics are only 4 games back of the Cavs for the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Celtics tonight are going to host the Heat. Celts have been rounding into shape. Like, they're coming off of a 6-game road trip where the Seas went 6-0, and they won their last game of that road trip in Memphis, 117-103 was the final, without Jaylen Brown. So that's an all-league player. That's a third-team all-league player. And the Celtics are so loaded and, most importantly, so healthy right now that to end a road trip, it was the first 6-0 road trip they ever have in the long-storied history of the Boston Celtics. They go on the road, finish a road trip, give Jaylen Brown the night off, and still beat the number 2 seed in the West or a top 5 seed in the West with Memphis. And you beat them on the road without arguably your second best player. So if you're Cleveland, the Heat is starting to turn up a little bit on them. And the Knicks are not a night off. Not that Miami necessarily is, but Miami has definitely slid back. And sort of that Jimmy Butler trade has now kind of caught up to them. But Cleveland just went through a bad 4-game streak where they lost to the Suns, the Kings, the Clippers, and the Magic. I mean, they went on the road for a roadie and ended up 2-5, only beating the Jazz and the Trailblazers along the way. And then they come home and lose to the Pistons. Well, they came home and beat the Spurs, then lost to the Pistons. Now, Cleveland has the Knicks. And if you're looking at it from a pure standing standpoint, the Knicks right now are the number 3 seed. And the team that seems to be showing a little bit of life in the East are the Milwaukee Bucks. So if everyone holds serve, meaning the standings kind of go the way they are right now, and if the Knicks are the 3, the Bucks are the 6th seed. That's a very dangerous matchup for New York, because I look at Milwaukee and I say, if they just pull it together and get it right, if they just peak at the right time, and they had a performance last night where you're starting to wonder if Giannis is kicking it into gear. He's now averaging over 30 points per game. I know they've had the good doctor out there for a while, and Glenn Rivers has the ways of the good doctor finally sunken in to the brains of this Milwaukee team. Because here's the thing. Cleveland and Boston, regardless of how they finish 1-2, if you look at 7 through 10 in the East, it's rubbish. Rubbish. Orlando, Atlanta, Miami, and the Bulls, please. It doesn't matter who wins their funky little tournament, because you're going to give the number 1 and the number 2 seed a bunch of time off, and then they're likely going to blow doors against any combination of those teams that match up with Boston and Cleveland. But look at 3 through 6. Pacers, Pistons. Pacers have been there a little bit. They got a great player in Tyrese Halliburton. And we know that the Pistons are one of those young teams that's knocking on the door. Hey, let me finally get to the point to where I'm in this playoff discussion. I almost look at Detroit and say, hey, you made it. And whatever you do against Indiana, excuse me, God bless you. Because if you win a round, great. If you don't, no one's expecting it anyway. So then you're sitting there, if you're the Celtics, and you're saying, man, I might have to beat the Knicks or the Bucks along the way. Well, that is unless the Bucks end up winning. And then you're kind of juggling things around a little bit in terms of the playoffs. But look, I'm looking at the Knicks now and I'm thinking to myself, have they done enough? They made great changes in the offseason, but in reality, have they done enough? for them to be able to handle a Milwaukee team that is 4-6 in their last 10, but they're showing a little bit of life. They're the dangerous team in the East. You know, and you can look at it two ways. If you're the Celtics, do you want the number one seed? Well, in theory, it might give you the easy path. It might give you the tougher path. I don't think you really know. That's why you just be really good and you try to peak for the playoffs and then feel good about where you sit. Just like right now, I think the Denver Nuggets have got to start to feel pretty good about themselves. Now, again, hand stamped championship credibility. They know how to build themselves up. Oklahoma City hasn't been able to break through and get to that NBA, you know, get to the mountaintop in the NBA. And they do have some young guys on that Thunder roster, but given the success they've had in prior years, you're now getting to the point to where you think Oklahoma City could break through. The surprise in the West are the Houston Rockets, to which I say, good for an experienced team that might match up against them in the first round. Because I look at Boston as a number two seed, and you're thinking that's the best team in the East. You're looking at Houston in the West, and you're saying, boy, that's pretty good, but damn, they're young. And what do young teams normally do in the NBA playoffs? They kind of slip and fall and falter a little bit. But right now, it's Oklahoma City, Houston, Denver, and the Lakers. And if it's a 3-6 battle first round, Denver gets the Grizzlies. Now, the Grizzlies are an interesting study because they're only three games back of Denver in the standings. However, when you look at Denver, winning record at home, winning record on the road. With Memphis, winning record at home, game over 500 on the road, but they also punted their coach. They're 2-8 in their last 10 games. The Grizz have lost four in a row, and they said, 10 games left in the regular season. This guy, Taylor Jenkins, is so bad that we have to rip the Band-Aid off right now and say, no, we got to get rid of this guy now for us to have any level of postseason success. I don't quite understand what they're doing down there in Memphis, and to me, they feel like they're a sitting target. They're there waiting to be plucked. If there's so much frustration in Memphis right now that whatever had to happen behind the scenes happened enough that they got rid of the coach, what does that tell you about the real mentality of the Memphis Grizzlies at this point? And the 4-5 right now in the West would be Lakers Warriors. LeBron's back, hasn't played great since he got injured. He's been okay. You can tell he doesn't look right. And then you have Golden State, who might be peaking at the right time. Now, if you're Houston, you're going to get likely Minnesota as the 7th seed. And I don't know outside of Ant-Man if there is enough for Minnesota to be able to win a round. I would dare say that, you know, you look at the record, you would give them a puncher's chance, right? But against Houston, another young team who you know is going to make some mistakes, they're going to get coached hard by Ime Udoka. That's a winnable series for Minnesota. So could we end up with, say, Oklahoma City, Denver beating Memphis, and Golden State beating the Lakers? And I don't think Minnesota's great. I just think Houston, I feel like Houston is ripe to be plucked in the first round this year, and Ant-Man just might be the guy to do it. Now, we know that we got some games left here to before the end of the regular season, but it's starting to heat up a little bit. And I would dare say 3-6 in each conference is pretty juicy. If you're going to give me Houston, Minnesota, that's a juicy 2-7 matchup. If you're giving me Celtics, Magic, I'll wait till round two to start paying attention from a Celtics end of things. But it's starting to heat up, and what's amazing is you've got you have multiple Celtic players who are really starting to peak a little bit, and Kristaps Porzingis would be one of them. But when you look up and down the roster of superstars, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, you have Tyrese Halliburton. Over in the West, you got SGA, you got Jokic, you got LeBron, you've got Steph Curry, you got Ant-Man, you got Ja Morant. The Clippers are loitering with all their olds. They ain't going to do nothing. I don't expect any. I mean, you know, how many of those olds are actually going to play for the Clippers when it comes playoff time? But then again, maybe they can put a scare in Oklahoma City if they emerge from Dallas and Sacramento, which I think ultimately the Clippers in Minnesota will. But we're ramping up with teams that we know. We're ramping up with superstars that we love. And it's not only the old players, it's the young superstars as well. And you look at Houston, you got what, Jalen Green. So you got other youngs that are making their way into this NBA postseason. And really here, the next, I mean, what are we looking at? 2 weeks, really, in the end of the regular season? There is a lot that matters. You know, does Boston say to hell with it? We're just going to go on a run and we're just going to try to beat everybody and make it difficult on Cleveland when it's all said and done. Now, I'm just trying to pull up the Cleveland schedule real quick. So they go New York, San Antonio, Sacramento, Chicago, Indy, New York, Indiana. Probably not enough tough games on the schedule for the Cavaliers to kind of collapse a little bit. But I do believe Boston is going to, they're going to push it, and they're going to try to make it tough on Cleveland, knowing that they're going to get the rest of the play-in games, those top teams. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Don't forget, you can get me on all the social medias. You find the app, I'm on it, at The Real Gresh, G-R-E-S-H. Coming up, everybody has complained about the men's tournament. But does the women's NCAA tournament combined with the results of the men kind of tell us something about, do we need to adjust our expectations for these tournaments or not? I'll get into that. I am Gresh, in for Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network. So, America, riddle me this at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. I am Gresh, in for Gelb, here today on the Infinity Sports Network. And may I ask you, Mr. and Mrs. America, what sport do you root for the worst team to go far? Think about it. Are you an NFL fan? Are you an NBA fan? Are you a baseball fan? Hockey? Do you ever sit, if it isn't your team, it's a big caveat, right? If you're emotionally invested into your team and they're an 8 seed and you think that, fine, I get that part of it. But just if you're an average sports fan, have you ever sat down at the beginning of a playoff run and you said, damn, I'm going to be really disappointed if the 7 seed Pittsburgh Steelers don't go into Buffalo and beat Buffalo, the number 2 seed. And if I don't get that, it's going to ruin my whole fun of watching this weekend. Have you ever sat down to watch the Masters and said, man, I really wish this, you know, 65-year-old guy who's living on an exemption would have just one more run, one more thing to get me all horned up for golf? Do you ever sit there? I mean, will you be looking at the Sacramento Kings make their way in as the 8 seed in the NBA playoffs? You're going to be sitting there going, well, I'll tell you, Sacramento doesn't beat Oklahoma City, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be mad. No. But yet, psychologically, And I talked about this last hour. I think it has been promoed into us, beaten into us in a way, just clubbed over the head as sports fans. The Cinderella makes the NCAA tournament. The Cinderella makes the NCAA tournament. Almost like it's chanting it in your head. And yet this year, very little Cinderella. And even when I look in the Sweet 16 of the women's tournament, which usually does not get the massive kind of upsets they'd say the men's tournament would. You know, you had a 10 seed that went on to the Sweet 16 and ultimately lost to Duke. No real high seeds in there. But the one thing we did see, no pun, was UConn did play USC as USC was the number one seed. Of course, Juju Watkins got hurt, mitigating circumstance. But when most people think about college basketball, especially when it comes to women, you know UConn's really good. And even though they were a number two seed this year, that is number one seed worthy type team. And then we had all the number ones in the men's game win. So does that tell us that this is what our future is when it comes to watching either the men's or the women's NCAA tournament? I mean, let's not act like there aren't more people who aren't aware of the women's game because of the run that Caitlin Clark was on the past couple of years. And you had people like Juju Watkins at USC and Paige Beckers at UConn and stars at UCLA and people like that. You still have plenty of stars to go around to sort of keep kind of the Caitlin Clark momentum going, let's call it, when it comes to the women's tournament. But in the women's game, we're getting UCLA, UConn, we're getting South Carolina and Texas. In the men, we're getting Duke and Houston, and we're getting Auburn and Florida. Now, in any given year, I don't care what the ranking is, UConn can beat anybody in the country when it comes to the women's game. They've done it. They've proven it. They are that good. They get those players. They're a big name brand. They're number one seed worthy. So essentially, in my mind, we have eight number one seeds in the Final Four. Now, I don't want that every year, but isn't this scenario better than what we had 2 years ago, America? 2 years ago, we had 2 5 seeds, a 9 seed, and a number 4 seed make the Final Four. And the number 4 seed, UConn, won that national championship. And let's remember the name brands we had in that Final Four. San Diego State against FAU was the game opposite UConn. Now, last year, we had NC State as an 11 seed make it. But I would ask you this. I brought up earlier how Arkansas was a 10 seed, and their head coach was John Calipari. So a lot of people couldn't look at them as a double-digit seed and think of them potentially being a Cinderella at all. At all. But NC State was in the ACC. That's a big team and a big brand. They've won a national championship before. It's just really interesting how we have not only selective memories as fans, but also I don't think anybody wants Cinderella in the Final Four. Remember the year George Mason made it all the way to the Final Four? Loyola of Chicago. Hey, hung around a little bit, but come on. Didn't you sit there looking at it like it was Oklahoma City and Sacramento in a closeout game? I mean, to use that as an example. You got the big name team and the big brand and all the big players, and here we go, you're going to go against, here's Cinderella. See, instead of all of us in America saying, my God, this could end up being some of the best 4 days of basketball we're going to have on the calendar with all these number one seeds in the Final Four, I kind of feel like we're sort of underplaying that a little bit. I feel like as if there have been some people who said, the tournament isn't as fun as it used to be. Again, if you end up with Kansas City and Buffalo in an AFC championship game, are you upset that you didn't get the two best teams in there? By seed, we got the four best teams in one bracket, and among the top eight seeds, you know, three ones and then a two, whatever you want to consider UConn, hell, I'd throw them in number five overall. That's fine. So you're getting eight, regardless of gender, eight of the best teams in basketball. And yet it feels like it's just another Final Four. And yet it feels like, here we go. It almost, hey, Final Four Saturday is great. It doesn't matter who's in it. Great. Give me San Diego State and FAU. Ugh. I don't want to see that. I might be okay with one team crashing the party every couple of years, but on the whole, I don't want to watch Kansas City, let's say, to use the NFL reference, beat up on the Chargers in a championship game. I just don't. I want to see the best. Same in basketball. Do you want to sign up for Celtics Indiana in another East final? Or do you want Cleveland Boston? In no other sport do we sit there and say, I want the stinkier team to win. Yet it happens in the NCAA tournament. We've got coaches. We've got big name brands. We've got the best teams in college basketball. This really, truly, this weekend should be the showcase of college basketball. It ain't going to be it every year, but this is the one year where if you're the NCAA, and please, they would have to pull their head out of their you-know-whats, but if you're the NCAA and you're hearing the, we didn't get enough Cinderella, the marketing now should be, by gum, you're getting the best of the best. The best weekend maybe in the history of the college basketball Final Fours is coming up. You should be pumping the snot out of it right now. Tell me how great it is. Club me over the head proverbially with these are the best teams we've had in these Final Fours collectively in X amount of years. You should be rushing to watch it. Because I hate to say, I'm still getting the feel of the, we didn't get enough in the early rounds. And people aren't embracing the greatness that is going to be this weekend on both the men's and the women's side. And I'm not a big women's basketball watcher at all. But I've learned that there are stars in that end as well. You're putting South Carolina in there, you got a star coach and you're getting star players. Same for UConn. Same for UCLA. You might just not know it if you don't follow it very much on the East Coast. This should be maybe the best set, men's and women's, set of Final Fours we have seen, I would dare say, maybe ever. Maybe the real excitement is going to be in these games and people will kind of come back around on being down on the NCAA tournament. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. You know, there was a movie where they said hats for bats once. Well, I guess now we have to look at how the bats are made. Why Major League Baseball desperately needed the torpedo bats. I am Gresh in for Gelb here today on the Infinity Sports Network. You can watch me do this show. How can you resist my handsome face? Head to YouTube, type in the Infinity Sports Network. That live stream will pop right up. You can also listen to me anytime, anywhere, and Gelb and everyone here on the Infinity Sports Network on the Odyssey app. Well, let me just say, as someone who admittedly lives in a Northeast market where people take all the sports very seriously, I'll be one of those who will stand up and say, I was tepidly ready for baseball. I know that there are some talk show hosts and, you know, I tell you, if you don't follow baseball, then maybe you're missing out back after this. Yeah, there are certain talk show hosts that are going to be the ones that are going to pound baseball like it's, you know, 1985, and people are going to rise up and get all unbothered to go with Uncle Pete to the ballpark and have a couple of wieners and watch the balls fly out of there. I don't know why I went Southern accent. I probably should have gone with a Chicago or a New York, because to me, that's where I think people still take baseball very seriously and still hand it down generation to generation. Like, I have two stepkids. One's going to be 23 and the other one is 20 and a half or so. And neither one of them, they couldn't care less about baseball. UFC, they're all over it. I say, hey, come on, let's go to Fenway. I got, you know, monster seats. They'll be like, I got something else to do. It's not into it. But boy, oh boy, that's why, in my opinion, the torpedo bats have been a godsend for big league baseball. Now, you had, really before the regular season started, you had a lot of kind of negativity swirling around the game, right? There were questions about its financial future. For those of you that, you know, I'm sure there's some fans out there who have been disrupted with the regional sports networks that have had to varying degrees make changes, and a lot of them were MLB rights holders. You know, you got two MLB teams right now that are really, I think, kind of unwanted in the markets that they're in. So the A's got out of Oakland. We know they're eventually headed to Vegas, but they're playing in a minor league ballpark and can't even get their freaking television product on the air. And then you have the Tampa Bay Rays, who I don't know what they're about to become. For a period, I thought they were going to split time between Tampa and Montreal, in which I would have said we should just then call them the Tampontreal Expos. Thank you very much. That's funny as hell. You laugh at that, America, because that is funny. But seriously, and they're playing in a minor league ballpark. And then their major rights holder, one of the five big networks in America, the big four-letter network that does sports, they look at it and say, you're not worth the money. You're not worth what we're about to pay you. So baseball, in my opinion, had kind of taken it on the chin a little bit going into the regular season, and then the New York Yankees hit 15 baseballs out of the ballpark in 3 days. And that's when people went, huh? What are these things? What are these torpedo bat deals? There's a guy who's a bat maker, Kurt Ainsworth of Marucci Sports. Now, Marucci Sports is the official bat of Major League Baseball. For those of you who didn't know that, right? I had no idea. However, they've talked about how building this bat kind of, you know, moves around some of the, you're tweaking with where you want the girth of the bat, you dirties out there. But that's the best way I can describe it. To me, it looks like a candle pin in a way. I don't know how many of you who can hear the sound of my voice right now on the Infinity Sports Network, Gresham for Gelb, at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. I don't know how many of you have ever been candle pin bowling. I think it's really a New England thing, to be quite honest with you. I know there's duck pin, and there's candle pin, and then there's big ball bowling. Or at least that's what it's called 10-pin bowling is really what it is. And I'm kind of sneaky good at all of them, I got to say. I don't know if bragging about being a good bowler is something that I should be doing on national radio, people, but nevertheless, you can tell me how great I am at bowling at The Real Gresh on all the platforms out there, X and Insta and YouTube and all that. You can find me. But just watching from having Youngs in my house, the one thing that did pique their attention a little bit were the torpedo bats in big league baseball. And it became, are these things legal? Are they not? And I find it interesting on a day where I sat in here for Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network, and the thing that I felt was lead worthy on this show today was the tush push and the fact that the NFL owners want to do something about it, but they're gutless and they don't want to vote on it now. They're kicking the can down the road a little bit. And you could look at the tush push in the same vein that you can torpedo bats, can you not? Because as we have learned, Major League Baseball knew about this last year. If anything, as I smack myself on the forehead, there should have been more people like me and others who were kind of picking up on this. I admit, I didn't know it until this year. I didn't know there were dudes that used it last year. I didn't know that this bat had been around for players to, you know, evaluate whether they go take some hacks in the cage and think they want to use this thing. So it's not like it is 100% completely new to the game of baseball or the bat makers or the people within the game. But a lot of like the tush push, I guess I have to ask the question. So it took all these New York Yankees to have an unbelievable 3-day stretch to start the season for the rest of big league baseball to now look at these torpedo bats and say, maybe I should be using them. I do believe two nights ago it was, or it might have been a night ago, Ellie De La Cruz of the Reds, I think went 4-for-5 and hit 2 long Johnsons. He then looked at it and was like, yeah, I guess I'll keep using this thing. But if this technology was out there for big leaguers, I guess, again, a lot like why not use the tush push, I'm surprised more players have not kind of gotten on board. So now I wonder if it's going to go the other way. Now I wonder if it's going to turn into a referendum against the torpedo bats or, you know, some guy who right now just stinks to high heaven like a Rafael Devers, right? If you've seen this guy start quickly for the Red Sox? This dude is their highest paid player. He's supposed to be one of the leaders on the team. Bristled at moving from third base to being a designated hitter, where he's still going to get his $33 million and has started 0-for-19 with 15 strikeouts. Forget getting Rafael Devers a torpedo bat. We got to get him one of those like big fat wiffle ball bats that you would use in the backyard where it's like the giant barrel on the thing. That's where I feel like they got to go like Gas House Gang. For those of you that remember the Great Bugs Bunny cartoon with the Gas House Gang. Nevertheless, you know, are we now going to get a guy like Rafi Devers who's like, well, gee, I can't swing my way out of a paper bag right now. Let me change my bat. And it turns into another 0-11 because the guy just, you know, he's got cranius rectus like crazy right now. Can't figure it out. Went to the different bat. Nah, I don't like it. You know, we start to hear kind of the other side of this whole torpedo bat deal. Now, I'll admit that the torpedo bats have not led me, say at, you know, 9 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night after some of these games get started in different time zones, it has not, for me, turned me into someone that says, wow, I got to see what's going on in this game because this team ordered a bunch of torpedo bats. It at least brought some fun back to baseball. It now gives you, as a fan, maybe the ability to start to think that you're just not going to see kind of a station-to-station game where, yes, they're out there and they're stealing bases and moving runners, and some of that has come back in big league baseball. But I think for just a lot of younger fans, it is how far can you hit it? I really kind of don't care what you're going to hit it with. Just hit it a long way and entertain me. And if my team wins along the way, great. But just give me a reason to be able to watch if I'm an average Joe Blow sports fan. Major League Baseball, in my opinion, needed this to get out there. They needed this to become a controversy. They needed this to become a thing to be able to get some people like me who side-eyed the product a little bit, kept an eye on it as much as I needed to because it is a part of my job. But for me, I've rarely ever sat down to do a talk show in 28 years where, unless it was championship related or controversy or something like that, on an idle Wednesday, I'm normally not sitting down and being like, hey, how about the final game of that series against the Pirates? But he gave me a little something like this where there might be some controversy, where there might be a little bit of, okay, people asking questions, or like maybe a guy like Jazz Chisholm Jr., right, for the Yankees, just hits, you know, a dozen long balls in the month of April. And I don't want to say like a star would be born, but it would become a part of the narrative. It would become a part of the story. You got to have things to be able to pass the time to talk about in baseball. And to me, this was one of them that was very necessary for the game, in my opinion. I do want to get back to the tush push because, boy, there are some folks talking out of both sides of their mouth. And, oh, NFL, what have you done to the kickoff? Do you want it? Do you not want it? Are you trying to save it? How about just admit you screwed it up? We'll get to that next. I'm Gresh and for Gelb on the Infinity Sports Network.